Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, the COO of Showpad, Jason Holmes. Obviously, a fantastic conversation around sales and CRM, and more particularly, the need for building tech to support your sales, or in some cases, the lack of building tech. And we kind of talk, it's an age-old question, is like the art versus science. Older generation love to go, it's all artwork. Younger generation likes to go, it's all science. Short answer for why that is young people are tech born, and older people have gone through the trials and tribulations to learn a process and how they want to sell, and are maybe reluctant to picking up tech. And the young people who are tech born have never really tried selling anything, including, well, anything really. And so the experience they did to try to shortcut it, and the older folks are trying to shortcut the learning curve, and here we are. And it creates a major problem as you build and scale a company, because you really don't know what is our sales infrastructure going to be. I may have no experience in it, so how do we do this? And I think Showpad does a fantastic job. I think it is the hybrid that this world needs in the business world as far as creating sales, because you can't do it all. You don't know it all. And so having someone support the sales methodology and making sure it's congruent with the technology that you're going to need to support it and what the outcomes, hopeful or otherwise, are going to be, you need someone who has been down that path. Just going and buying an out-of-the-box tech stack with no understanding of how it's going to work or how to install it or how to maximize it is a mistake you would never make in any other line of the business that you're running. But for some reason, we do it in sales. So very interesting conversation with Jason. Before we go to that interview, we've got to check in with the Startup Inbox, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. The question is a good one, and it was answered on the show, so I don't even have to give my opinion. You can listen to the show. The question is buy or build. Does it make more sense for me as a tech company who has access to tech developers to build the product that I want to use or to buy it? And I'll give you a brief and let Jason fill it in at the end of the show. But the brief answer is really buy. And I think it's surprising to a lot of tech founders as they think, well, we've got the capacity to build, but are you in the business of building CRMs? That's the question. Because it's really, yeah, you're trying to solve your problem internally, but really the product has to be realized and seen by the customer. The customer has to like what they're getting from you. And if they don't, then whatever you built is not working. And that's an expensive mistake. And so it's always better, I think, to buy and try and then figure it out from there. But obviously, Jason knows a lot more about it. Former COO of Marketo, VP of Global Professional Services at Adobe, now the COO and President of Sales Platform for Showpad. So great conversation. This is my interview with Jason Holmes, COO of Showpad. I think I'm just going to start in the same area that I do with anyone who has answers for sales. We posted this article today about I did an event once called like the death of a salesman, and it's not the death of the salesman or salesperson or the role. It's just like the changing of the guard and the tools and things that have been built and have sort of taken over. I think for the right person who knows what they're doing and they've been at it, it makes them super powerful. For the people who have never done sales, and quite honestly, maybe they fell into sales because they didn't get whatever it was they were looking for, they look at it like an enablement tool, and there's a disconnect. And every time I have an opportunity to talk to somebody who not only comes from this space, but is like clearly skilled in that art, I just try to extract as much of the art and the science as I can, because I think the listeners, particularly the young ones, and I am trying to help like would-be salespeople, but I'm really trying to help the founders who are hiring salespeople, because I think that the first major real hires as you take your, like, I would say probably Series A and up, is Salesforce. And they just don't do a good job, because I don't think they know what they're looking for.
Right.
No, so I'm just, from your vantage point, I mean, where do you see the world of sales today versus when you first got into business?
Sure. So I think death of a salesman maybe is a good place to start in some ways, which is where you started.
Yeah.
And I think there was, as technology started to become more and more prevalent and started to eat software, eating different parts of the world, essentially, this idea of having a death of a salesperson or death of a salesman started to get a little bit of traction. And I think that's largely been debunked at this point in time. I think you broadly have two different types of selling when it comes to B2B selling, when a salesperson is involved. There are things that are super repeatable, easy, low value, low cost things. E-commerce has essentially devoured that part of B2B selling. And so I do think that that's off the table and will continue to accelerate, right? So there's lower and lower value there. I think when you get into much larger, more complex selling, more complex pricing, packaging, negotiation, post-sale support, upselling, cross-selling, there's no doubt a salesperson, there is no death of a salesman in that part of the world. And then it really becomes about technology-assisted selling, right? And how can you become more effective? How can you sell bigger deals? How can you be more relevant? And the way we think about it in particular, and that I think about it, is how can a salesperson provide a continuous or continuity of the selling and buying experience all the way throughout the sales cycle? Because what we typically find is this disconnect between what you see on someone's website, the different content they consume, and then you go to a salesperson, and that salesperson, I think to your point, is either in tune with that buyer experience and is has the tools and technologies available to them to keep it continuous, or it's a complete disconnect and they come in with their own information, their old school way of selling, essentially, and it becomes a huge form of dissonance, essentially, for the buyer during their buying experience.
What's interesting to me about sales in general is, for some reason, and it's so bizarre because, well, obviously it's a connected piece of marketing, it's siloed in our conversation, at least among the tech companies. And maybe that's a lot of, there's a long story of reasons why, and the disconnect, and engineers and CTOs and founders maybe come from a technical, you know, skill set, not people. But the way that we look at tech, the way we look at marketing, design, you know, product, whatever, sales does not get the attention on the artistry that we get when we talk about UX. We break apart parts of technology, parts of marketing, parts of things to be like, no, this is the build, this is how you're going to deliver it here, you know, whatever. Here's the intuitive nature. Sales, I always go back to my dad. You know, I grew up traveling all over the place with my dad as a salesperson. And it, you know, in the olden days, we didn't pay attention, not that he's that old, but like in the olden days, we didn't pay attention to data so much. We didn't really have access to, you just sort of like intuitively knew like trends in your head or whatever. You might have an Excel sheet or something. But I remember watching, there was a nature to how he was going to go about it. He thought about it. He knew he was going, and I had a relationship with this person. They bought from me before. I'm very happy. I'm going to this person who maybe is not so thrilled with their product. I'm going to take a different approach. We looked at, and you mentioned this in your sort of beginning here, that there are different types of sales. There are different levels. There are different price points. There's different packages. There's different ways you're negotiating. There's different, you have a different role than say someone who's just calling and pounding the phones. And for whatever reason, we have left all of these younger new salespeople without anyone to sit there and be like, no, like this is the art. Like you can learn the skill.
That's right.
And I just wonder, like, what, as a person who's working in businesses that are designing technologies to help support these people, in a lot of ways, the success of those teams are ultimately tied to the success of your company. What do you guys do, or what do you say to people to try to help them figure out how to use your tool in the best way?
Yeah, so I think if I zoom out for a second and look at, you know, your comment, I think, around product and engineering and how marketing has evolved and where sales has, you know, how far has sales come along at the same time. I mean, over the course of the last number of years, we've watched like this mainframe client server back to web, now to SaaS, like invented, blown up, reinvented, blown up, reinvented. In marketing, same thing, right? Marketing 20 years ago versus marketing today is like wildly, wildly different than it ever was. And you look at sales, and sales over the course of that last period of time has barely moved. In large, I would argue.
I really agree with you.
From a tech standpoint, it just has barely moved. And from a process standpoint, it's still, here's our sales methodology. Yes, there have been CRM tools.
It's always the clunkiest tool.
It is. And it's always the clunkiest, the most neglected, you know, stepchild in many cases of the organization from a tech-assisted standpoint, right? Everyone feels like a stepchild, but from a tech-assisted standpoint. And so I think that a lot of the world felt, well, we'll put in a CRM and that'll solve it, right? Yes. Like that'll make a huge step in the right direction. And what the CRM has effectively done is done opportunity tracking, quote creation, and then discipline and governance around how you can create orders, essentially. So it's done a good job of protecting the finance department from the salespeople and creating a back office.
Which may be what they wanted, but
Yeah. But if you really think about, like, what matters is the salesperson, when they're sitting in front of the prospect or the customer, what words are coming out of their mouth? What have they been trained to say? What tools have they been given? And, you know, what the way that I break it up is into two areas where I think that there's really where there's been traction. I think one has been lead management, right? So the 5,000 or 10,000 companies out there that wake up every day trying to figure out, how do I find the best accounts? How do I find the best targets? How do I create the best leads? How do I nurture those leads? How do I ultimately deliver leads over to the sales organization? Like, there's been a massive amount of progress in the last, like, plenty to go, don't get me wrong, but, like, that dog is out running and has been for the better part of 5 to 10 years at this point in time. You go, okay, well, what's the next thing that happens? Now I have the lead. Now I actually have to go sell. I have to do something.
Yep.
It has to be more than just the binder of what I was, you know, what I was taught during my sales methodology training. Like, what are the tools? How am I going to create an experience that I'm going to that I'm ultimately going to deliver on here? And I think it's, and I talk about those two things as, like, the two currencies between marketing and sales are leads and content, right? And the world of leads has had a ton of progress, and the world of content has had a really limited amount of progress. And maybe the place that I would wrap it up is there's also the human element that I think exists in here, where you have younger sellers, you have mid-career sellers, and you have more experienced sellers who are a little bit further in their career. The younger sellers clearly show up wanting to and needing to and being willing to adopt technology very early on and really haven't been taught the artistry at some level. And you have the most senior sellers out there who are, in many cases, a lot about, I mean, stereotypically, but in reality, who are a lot about the artistry and are still trying to say, I think I can wrap up my career without learning all these tools.
Yeah.
And it's,
we see that in every industry.
Right.
But
and that's push pull right now inside the organization. And I'll tell you, like, watching our senior sellers, our senior managers, and our junior sellers work together to create, you know, what ends up being, yes, everyone has their own way of adopting technology and adopting different tools out there. But watching, you know, if you make the tools easy enough and if you make them valuable enough, ultimately everyone will adopt the tools and technology, and everyone will benefit from the sales technology assisted selling that I think we have in front of us.
I totally agree with you. I think there's funny kind of quips, if you will, that I've heard just throughout the years of the show, where we've run into founders and companies, and these aren't, like, necessarily nobodies or small people, who bought, you know, whether it's Salesforce or whatever they chose, they committed $12,000, $15,000, $25,000. And never really looked into the fact that, like, yes, you do have the ability to do drip campaigns. Yes, you do have, you know, Pardot and whatever. But you don't have any of the data. You have no infrastructure. You have absolutely no one who knows how to use it. So it just sits. I mean, we bought it to get a sponsorship, but we actually could have used it. But even if we did, we didn't have a sophisticated enough way of managing our contacts to be able to set the automation pieces up that make it useful. And so the money just ends up getting wasted because they don't train it. The other thing I noticed, I think, is really interesting, and it might be the good segue into to you guys and how you handle things. The integration with marketing with the finance department, kind of started on the finance side. We're starting to go into marketing when you've got the email drip campaigns and so forth. The automated email and call and ping and text and inbox on LinkedIn, all this stuff, it like drives me insane. And the funny thing is, when I talk to people, they go, does it drive you insane because of the volume, or does it drive you insane because it is just hollow? And to me, I anticipate salespeople coming at, like, that. That's part of business. That's your job. Like, that, my job is to suit out the best ones to me to work with. So I don't mind being pinged all the time. My problem is when they have very limited notes, because even if they do have some integration with their CRM and then their marketing and so forth, the information that somebody on the call filled into the notes section to somebody who sent to email, to somebody who sent to meet with you, the notes are incomplete. It's just like, you know, his name's Bob and we had lunch on whatever, note that his wife's anniversary, what, like, it's stupid shit that no one cares about.
Right.
The part that blows my mind is how they have not focused on integrating with the engineering side, the actual product side, to be like, there really is only two questions that I want you to be able to come to me with. One, do you know the pain points that I'm trying to solve, or not because my industry is, but me? And what are the concerns that you have, to be transparent enough with me to tell me, here's the concerns we have about fulfilling your needs, but this is a starting point. If you came in with that, I would answer your call every time.
Right.
And they just don't do that. And so I wonder, you know, where are you guys at in the development piece of this? Because your company is absolutely, I mean, Showpad is on the absolute cutting edge of everyone in sales, in my mind.
Yeah, so my general take on your read on the situation is I see actually a tremendous amount of progress in marketing alone, right?
Yeah.
Set sales aside, marketing being able to manage a conversation with a potential buyer is, I would give it a B+ at this point.
Okay.
I think it's made a fair amount of progress, like what they say to you on social and then retargeting you with a display yeah. ad and then coming up with an email that stays in context with where are you in your buying journey or your consideration process as well. And I really feel, though, it's this line that sits between once it leaves the world of marketing and goes over to sales, it just, for the most part, falls off a cliff. And the salesperson shows up relatively uninformed and somewhat clueless, like your entire journey up until that point.
Yep.
And so the way that we look at it is it very much is there is work to be done to solve the problem just in the sales silo, for sure, right? Can you have reps that can find content? Can they be better trained and all that? I do think, though, the big win, right, as you go down the road a few years from now, the big win is consolidating the data set from a CRM, for example, and what's, you know, the context from the CRM, what industry, how big's the company, what's the position or role of this buyer with marketing, what has their experience been to date, that then yields an effortless or seamless, hey, seller, this is exactly how you need to show up and the right message to send at the right time. That becomes nirvana, right? When you went from not just obviously from the seller standpoint, from the marketer standpoint, but most importantly from the buyer standpoint, right? Because now they're not getting this, well, marketing seems like they got it together, this, like, who hired this sales guy? He has no idea that I read 35 emails prior to him picking up the phone and talking to me. Like, it creates, again, massive dissonance for the buyer. And, you know, we and I very much think about how do you create that ultimate best buyer experience is ultimately the thing that takes selling and the buyer experience to the next level. And it feels like it's something that's a 21st century experience as opposed to right now. It still very much feels like a 20th century experience.
Totally. I heard a line not long ago that I thought was really as perfect as, like, a lot of times when you're looking at from selling to a buyer, you're trying to find the right time. The good sellers know how to make always the right time. They always know when how to make this the right time for you. Because, like, the thing that I think a lot of the, like, banner ads and click ads that are on, like, .coms, the ad rolls of the world, they are good-ish in the sense that, like, you did click on target, so then it runs the ad and it makes sense. But for the most part, where social media, I think, is really dominated is the fact that they have enough real data to know, like, is now a good time? Are you expecting a baby? Are you, like, it's not just making an assumption. And I mean, it is, but it's a much more well-informed assumption. And to be able to take that, to your point, to the next level, to where you can take that information and then go, okay, so that aside, I know now is a good time. Here is what your next steps are going to be. Your next 9 months with this new baby are going to look like this. And we can, you know, and that's a tiny sale. At a major sale, it's a business. It's like, you know, what size are you? Oh, we just raised, you know, $10 million Series B. Okay, so how many people are you hiring? 50 engineers. These are the questions that you should be able to scrape and know to go, I know your roadmap. We have customers that look like you all day long. Let me tell you what your roadmap is likely going to look like. And if at any point you already know this, you know, by all means, cut me off. This is where we think we can plug in and help you. And that is not only is it better for the seller, but that's a buyer's experience that's rewarding.
Yeah, no doubt.
Even if I don't go with you,
yeah,
I still learn.
I agree. And I think, you know, we talk about it these days as the P word. You know, it ultimately boils down to a lot of personalization that requires not just segmenting into what industry and what size are you and all that, but, like, what's going on with your business in particular and being able to then at scale, like, and not try to do everything manual, but in an automated way, equip the sellers with the right message at the right time to the right buyer to solve the right problem. And you know as well as I do that the very best sellers out there, certainly they do a good pitch. They know how to close. They can negotiate well. But ultimately, it's how do you build a coalition of champions inside of your buyer? And how do you create urgency when perhaps there is no urgency other than what the seller is able to create? And people can do it by FOMO. Here's what your two other competitors are doing. They can do it by coming across as an expert. Yes, you just raised a round. Let me explain to you what's going to happen next and how we can help you. There are a variety of ways, but if they can create that urgency and ultimately they can create that coalition inside of the buyer, they can create a tremendous amount of momentum that otherwise you'd just have another prospect out there that, oh, they're not ready to buy yet. I mean, great sellers create buyers who are ready to buy, as opposed to just finding the buyers that have already come to that conclusion.
You couldn't build a career on just luck.
No.
Like,
right.
I mean,
and waiting for things to happen, right?
It never works that way, and you run out of time. And so the other part about this, I think, is it's sort of mind-blowing, because you talk about the 21st experience versus what is like the 19th century experience.
Right.
It blows my mind today still, and I'm guilty of it occasionally when it's like I did research, but like I didn't look past the obvious, is the number of sellers who come to the wrong buyer. The company might be a great buyer for you, should be a good customer, but the person that you went to was too high, or they were too low. But usually it's just you went right to the top, and it's like, they haven't dealt with that decision in 5 years. Like, you're like completely wasting your shot.
That's right.
And you like, to your point, you're trying to build buy-in from multiple angles of that company to make them all be like, hey, did you hear? Did you? Or so-and-so's having a conversation with them tomorrow. Make sure they tell them I want, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I think the up and down is something in terms of like, do you sell to Vito, you know, from 20 years ago? It's, that mindset.
It was always Vito buying. Right. He had a lot of money. Vito.
Right. Exactly. And then, or is it, do you move to where you think that buyer is? I think the vertical thing is something a lot's been written about. Over the course of years, I actually think the thing, and even as we see in our sales cycles, especially with enterprise buyers that are doing bigger ticket items, it's the breadth of the buying committee that is much more tricky to manage these days, right?
Oh,
so it's how many kittens do you need to get into the basket between the procurement team, the IT team, the sales team, and the marketing team, and the sales enablement team, and this guy who's the Salesforce developer who actually makes all the decisions, and right? And so it's always been a multi-stakeholder or, you know, multiple buyers out there, but I've never seen it more pronounced than it is right now. And I think a lot of that has to do with people just end up having more access to information. Therefore, they have more opinions they share and communicate internally. Therefore, you just have more influencers in your deals than you ever had before. And so I don't know, like, marketing isn't going to solve that problem particularly well. Brand building for different stakeholders and different types of personas probably makes a dent in it. But ultimately, you've got to get sellers out there who are spending less time like, how do I get trained? Where are my leads? How do I find content? And more time figuring out, okay, I don't just need to know one or two people inside this company. I have to build a relationship with nine people across this business, and they have to lean into those broader relationships in these businesses. And that's where I feel like, back to this, you know, life of a salesman, not death of a salesman. Like, it's where do you reallocate that time to continue to add value and to continue to grow deals and get deals done inside of these customers?
So there's two big pieces here that I think are good to hone in on for the tech market in general, particularly early stage. And by early, I'm still going into like Series C and D. And I'm going to put the investor hat on for this part of the conversation. It's something that I think a lot of investors, including very well-known investors, do very poorly. They get attracted by the shiny light, and they're like, oh my God, look at the TAM. It's huge. And they dump their money into it. And they forget that when you look back on like some of the best companies built in this country or in the world, they did not raise an obscene amount of capital and then try to grow into it. They built a company, they slowly worked their way through, which enables you by default, assuming everyone's doing their job, enables them to accomplish what you just outlined, which is to build a relationship with multiple people, to not take the sword out and take your big swing right in the front and then like, well, we lost, let's move on. It's save time, it's efficiency. That's bullshit. You have a run rate because you raised a bunch of money. You don't have clients or customers, which we'll get onto that in a second. This is the second part of this piece. You have only so much time and you have to get the sales in its volume. They're not the right sales. And we've gotten away, I think, from looking at it like, if it takes 6 months to get Caterpillar, then it takes 6 months. And that means, how do we do it? Do we just go right to the top? No, because they're going to say, no, it'll take 6 days. We got to go front level, here, here, and here. You two take that, you take that, and we work our way to the middle. And if you do that, you might run out of money. I don't know. But if you raised your money with that as your mindset, I think you're setting up to fail, which leads to the other part of this, which I think is also where I think you guys really have a gigantic opportunity, is the number, and I know that you've seen this all the time, the tech companies, and these can be publicly traded now, that are lopsided on sales in the sense that the CEO or whoever the main face is bringing in the gigantic multinational businesses that are their partners. And they make up 60+% of the revenue of the company. And they have basically just said, to hell with it, put a couple of low, cheap salespeople on it and try to run some smaller volume sales. And what happens when you lose that big pillar customer?
Right.
You go out of business.
That's right.
And they have no infrastructure. I'd love to know, with Showpad in particular, the different tools and methodologies and things that all of these companies are missing out on. Because I think that, like myself, I'm the guy who's going to go meet with the CEOs of companies and try to become a partner. I'm the guy you're going to sit across from and try to do this. But during that negotiating, it would behoove me to hire the right sales leader on my team to implement the tools and the tactics and the things that we're going to scale, because I'm not scalable.
Right.
What do you guys, walk me through how Showpad literally kind of does its business.
Sure. So first, I'm going to take this at a relatively strategic level, like where you were talking about enterprise selling, or, you know, essentially, how do you get capital efficiency when you're trying to get, and how do you not burn all your cash while you're getting a bunch of 6-month sales cycles underway? So first and foremost, I think as you look at, especially as, you know, subscription and SaaS type businesses in tech have come along in the last 10 years, many of them start mid-market, right? They start at the SMB, at the small business level, and they work their way up market, right? Very few have just started at, all we do are whale deals that are million-dollar deals. And
I tried that, right? Actually.
Yeah, and it's super risky.
Yeah,
and it was. So ultimately, the way that we look at it, the way that we're operating, I think with the way that most companies, either by accident or by choice, are operating, is they start in the mid-market because you can get fast sales cycles, medium size, average selling prices, and you can get a sense of how to win, how to lose, feedback on your product, you know, how to adjust the product, how to get more competitive, like all sorts of cash flowing the business, combined with rapid feedback of your value proposition and rapid feedback on your product, happens through that small and medium sized business selling.
And the pace that the SMBs work at, I think, is also it's conducive to to being able to learn and grow.
It is, and it creates momentum, right? Because it's win, 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 win. Like if you
flywheel.
Have 10 wins a month versus you wait 6 months for one win, you're also talking about how do you manage the psychology of the organization over that period of time to continue to have momentum and think that they can succeed as a company. And it's awfully hard when it's, we have another meeting with Caterpillar. Like, that's really hard to celebrate as a company. So we really think about how do we balance like mid-market velocity selling with enterprise selling, and very much have started in the velocity mid-market space and then have grown into the enterprise space. And we've done that for those three reasons, right? Product feedback, value prop feedback, and cash flowing the business, essentially. So we've gone from a place where it was 100% mid-market to now it's 60% enterprise, 40% mid-market. Have no desire. Lots of companies like the idea of transitioning into the enterprise. We have no interest in transitioning to the enterprise. We want to continue to drive mid-market. Part of it's TAM, but part of it is just unit economics and cash flow. Like, how do you
know the business?
How do you afford to be in the enterprise space while not losing your shirt and taking on all this massive risk at the same time?
Which is the same problem that your customers have.
Yes.
I mean,
no doubt.
Literally.
No doubt. And so when we think about the tools and the technology, I mean at a tactical level, like we use Salesforce as a CRM solution, we use a CPQ solution, we use Outreach as a for sequences, for doing outbounding for BDRs. We use Marketo because I came from Marketo.
I was going to say, I know why you use Marketo.
We ripped out HubSpot, so sorry if you're listening and you're from HubSpot. But had to move on from that and upgrade. beyond that, we use, obviously, Showpad.
Yeah.
Is a pretty fundamental part of how we operate in terms of both onboarding new reps, continuous training of reps, as well as helping manage all of the content. And then the beauty of being able to measure, you know, all of our lead performance coming through something like Marketo, and all of our content performance going through Showpad as well, gives our marketing team like a ton of insight on what resonates, what people are clicking on, downloading, using, what resonates, what causes wins, and what doesn't. And so it helps us continually optimize how marketing contributes to the success of the sales organization. Beyond that, I feel like we have like 100 different tools.
I think
we have like 200.
I asked you for a reason, because the tech component of this, I use this somewhat as a forecasting device when I'm talking to all these different companies, particularly let's stick to just the CRM sales sort of cycle companies. Based on what they answer to that is sort of the forecast on what kind of business they operate and what their plan is. And I'm not saying this, it's obviously a very general statement, but I don't mean it in a negative to generalize some of the companies that we've had on that we like and that are great companies, and their business is perfectly healthy and will scale into oblivion, or in a good way, however you want to look at that. But what I do see is companies who create a very basic, you mentioned HubSpot, not trying to poo-poo HubSpot, but this is a great example of it. There is a gigantic market for them. And that there's a reason Salesforce invested a lot of money in them as well. But they're essentially, their methodology until further noticed is going to have to be a churn and burn. There's 8 gazillion companies in the world. And if we get a certain percentage, a tiny percentage of them, we're a very profitable company, but we are not going to invest in support systems to make sure that those companies stay with us forever. We're just going to get them in and get them out. And if they stay with us, awesome. If they don't, the hell with them. And I had a conversation with a guy earlier today about this exact same thing of like, there are businesses, particularly in like telecom, where it is absolutely a death sentence to cut the price of your product. It is cheaper to just lose the customer and go spend money on marketing and get a new one. And for those companies, which is not ShowPad, ShowPad is the exact opposite of that. They're coming in and going, we want to make sure a customer that comes on with us loves us and uses us again and tells their friends to use us again. And we invest again and again and again in sustainability, to your point about staying in your market and not trying to go somewhere where that's not what you do. And you're not given, they're not valuing that way. The problem with that is that a million companies are spending a lot of money one time and thinking our problems are solved, only to find out their problems just begun.
That's right.
And they're out whatever 100,000 plus that they spent on this tool that they can't use.
Right. Well, I think what you have for the most part, and the part of me that runs a tech company likes this some days, especially at the end of the quarter.
Yeah, I bet.
But I think the buyer side of me who buys a lot of tech as well, is that we still have buyer, you know, still as a buyer, even internally, the tech drives the solution, right? Meaning people will say, we need to go buy this product. Well, what problem are we trying to solve? And it's like, well, you know, we just need one of these because everyone has one of these. It's like, no, like we actually need to understand
answer.
What problem we're going to solve and then who's going to work on it, who's going to show up and make sure this thing works every day, what's the ongoing investment, just like maturity of being a buyer that actually figures out, like, how is this going to add value to our company for the next 5 years?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I see that every day as somebody who, you know, as who sells, you know, our tech to companies all day long. Where you're right, like people will acquire tech, whether it was this company, the last company, or 2 companies ago that I was at, they don't invest in it the right way because they don't have a real game plan on what they're doing, or they have turnover on their side or whatever variety of reasons. And you're right, they end up churning and burning through a lot of technology that at the end of the day doesn't add a whole lot of value into the system. And so, you know, I had an example recently, like in the last week maybe, with a project that we were looking at getting off the ground. Just around acquiring like a data provider, and was like, look, we're going to lose our discount if we don't buy this thing by the end of August. And, you know, classic, classic a sales rep trying to create
urgency,
right? Yeah. So I totally appreciate it.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. So I'm going to lose my discount. But this
do you call them
gonna...
out on that? I have to ask.
I do.
You
I totally
should.
Do.
I advise everyone out there, just call them out. I mean, it's real.
Right. Exactly.
You don't want my business after August? Okay.
Right. I'm totally cool with it. In fact, that's what I said. I'm like, look, the reality is this is going to sit on the shelf for 4 months while we figure it out. And that discount that you're all interested in giving me
anyway.
Is just evaporated because it's just not adding any value to the business right now. And so I do find that I would, you know, and I work very hard to just as a company, like if you're a tech, a founder or somebody who's running go-to-market or running a big piece of a tech business, like I tend to go quite slow on adding the tech in, and I really try to lead with, like, I wait until they're screaming in the streets almost that I have to have this thing. An example that I had recently as well was, you know, is it time to do CPQ or isn't it, right? Should we put in a configure price quote, and do we do Aptus or Salesforce's Steelbrick or whatever? And we did like a little bit of a bake-off, and I'm like, it feels like I'm the only person wanting to put this in, and I'm not sensing like a lot of demand and screaming coming out of the finance organization, the board, you know, other people. So we're just going to sit on it for a while and wait until this happens. You know, and
it's
as
the
a
same
buyer,
approach people are supposed to take when hiring. I mean, you're hiring tech, essentially.
Exactly. And so, like, hire half as much or hire half the tech.
Yep.
But make sure what you put in actually sticks and is going to. You have a five-year mindset. But ultimately, you know, HubSpot is actually a great tool for a certain set of companies, right? But once a company, needs a certain level of complexity or sophistication in the tool, it starts to run out of a little bit of steam. So you are going to ultimately have to go, just like with people, in a lot of cases, you're going to have to go top people. You'll have to go top some of the tech that you've brought in. It made sense at the price point and the complexity at that point when you acquired it. And 3, 4, 5 years later, hey, it's been a great relationship. It's time for us to move on. We're going to go find the next level up solution out there.
I also think to the kind of the previous conversation here was we put a lot of pressure and honestly, a lot of the bad vibes on the salespeople when in reality, I think the buyers are just as ill-informed and just as ill-suited to be in a deal. The number of people I come into, I had a guy on a show, on the live show a couple weeks ago, wrote the book, The Transparency Sale. We went into this whole deal about looky-loos. What I call looky-loos is like the buyer who's never going to buy, but he just loves to like keep talking to you. He's bored. And it just amazes me how many people come into a scenario where they asked for the meeting. Like it's you wanting to buy from me or partner in whatever way. And you're not prepared. You don't have anything on your side figured out. You're just kind of wasting my time. And so like you're posing questions to me that I can only fail at because I don't have enough information. But my training tells me, I mean, a seasoned salesperson like yourself would stop and be like, go find out more. And you know how to get rid of looky-loo. But the average one, they are trained to have an answer. And they come in with this like, and they just keep trying to push, and you just waste so much time. And I just wish that a lot of the people who you're talking about, these customers who are your partners, I wish that they would do the diligence that you're doing internally to make sure that, in a way, like a salesperson, you're creating urgency within your team. Like, you know, if they're screaming for it, the adoption rate will be significantly higher. So don't come out and try to buy stuff or price quote me until you actually have a need.
That's right. Yeah, I also, an example I would use of that, of the looky-loo, is here's the way that actually goes down, I think, is they don't really have a lot of urgency, but they want to learn a little bit about what's going on.
Or create it on their own.
Right.
They want to build it on their own.
Right. And then what happens is they talk to you, and then they talk to your competitor, and somehow they feel super informed on, you know, what problems you're trying to solve and what they need based on whichever competitor said something. And ultimately, I think that's how you get a bunch, this is going to be sort of esoteric, but I think that's how you get a bunch of tech companies in particular who have this, feel this need to create like 5,000 features inside of their products, even though you only used 40 of the features in the first place, is a lot of people like shopping back and forth, believing the bullshit of the other company, and somehow it becomes a must-have, and you're like, but you're never going to use that. Like, why on earth are we even having this discussion? And when you really take a deep breath and step back, you go, because you actually have no idea what it is you're trying to buy or what problem you're trying to solve. Right.
Totally.
And that's when you have that clarifying moment. And I had a meeting a week and a half ago with a huge company in Texas, with the buyer, like this, you know, the buying committee, you know, there were three or four of them. And the level of detail of understanding, because they had actually built a system that does what Showpad does, but they built it 10 years ago. And they knew every nook and cranny. They knew every analytic that they needed, every type content type that needed to go in or out of it. I mean, at the end of the meeting, I thanked them. I was like, you are by far the most informed buyer that knows exactly what matters and what doesn't and what problem needs solving and what doesn't. Like, we will be great partners with this company as we go forward because we just aligned on, you know, what are the things that matter?
What's important?
That's right.
So I want to ask you, I mean, obviously your background is very diverse, very successful. The Marketo, which we mentioned, the piece I think that I'd love to see is, I'm sure you're familiar with locally here, G2, the transformation in the B2B buying with the reliance of using reviews, particularly peer reviews. In some regards, I don't want to, like, I'm definitely not putting G2 in the crowd of like a Yelp, because Yelp is like a sounding board for like very upset people. But there's something that is great about peer-to-peer, and then there's something that's sort of like salty about it. And I'm just curious, like, what role you view the crowdsourcing of information going forward in sales?
I think it's I think it is another important data point in the buying process and something people should listen to. I know for sure if I'm going to go look at tech, I'm like, where do they stack up? And G2 is a standard thing that that I do and that we do. I also think it's, you know, G2 has an opinion, Forrester has an opinion, Gartner might have an opinion, Sirius probably has an opinion. I will also tell you, though, that I will listen still to this day more to my buddy who's the CRO of XYZ company over there. What was your actual experience? How did this actually go down? Because I just have I think personally, and I think in some cases it's quite warranted, I have a bit of a skeptical eye toward a lot of those different things. Yeah. I think unless you really know someone who understands your problem and like speaks your language, like having that level of connection with someone. And frankly, similarly, people will call me who I've known for years that are like, hey, I know you were picking between these two solutions. Yeah. Why'd you go with this one? And that's just the one that they buy because they're like, you know, we're on the same level because we understand the context of the problems that we're solving, where we are as buyers, where we are in terms of growing and building these companies.
It's
so I think it's important. I don't think it's like this massive transformation, like everything goes to that direction and nothing else.
No, I agree with you. I think it's also what's really interesting to me about those, the all peer, but also just the way that we interpret it. So it's sort of like a Reddit effect. So you look at like name any SaaS product. And I could tell you a circumstance where it's great, but I could tell you a circumstance where it's awful. And whether it was successful or not within a company has most often, or at least for the, you know, the notables, most often it has nothing to do with the technology stack. It has nothing to do with whether, like, in theory, it would work in a vacuum. However, my company has these disconnects that have nothing to do with whether this product works or not, but it didn't work for us because of this. So when I ask you, when I say to you, you know, Jason, do you pick this? Why? And you're like, well, listen, both are great products, but my company is set up like this. So if your company is set up like this, it probably won't work out for you. And that's not going to be on G2. And that's insight that you, that's the looky-loo. That's like learning about yourself.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's the success or failure with technologies has almost nothing to do with the technology itself. To your point, I think it's, did you have a firm understanding of the problem you're trying to solve? And to your point, like the context inside of your business, what disconnects?
I mean, I went very specific. Like, obviously, it doesn't have to be that specific.
I think it's like, what problem are you trying to solve? Well, we're trying to solve problem A and we bought product category B. Happens all the time, right? And I think that's a huge one. And the second one is, what people and priority initiatives do you put behind? Like, do you staff it? And you put it, does an executive or does somebody in the organization actually drive it? And I think it's those two things. So I bought the wrong tool, or we bought the right tool, but it somehow just fell off the list and like the CEO doesn't care anymore and the head of marketing really doesn't really ask much about it. No one's driving this thing from a, you know, from an executive or a senior level inside the organization. And I think that those are the, I mean, that summarizes, I think, 90%+ of the failures of technology.
I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree. And on that same front, the last thing I've got for you here is, you know, being someone who's been involved in roll-ups and acquisitions and having to go from one big company to an even bigger company to an even bigger company. There is this really fundamental question that it's tech companies, but it's really everybody that they have to solve. And again, it could be tech or it could be sales or it could be whatever, but let's stick to sales. The out of the box or build it conversation as it pertains to, we have this problem we want to solve. We've got four products we can pick. One solves more of this. One solves less of this. One solves sort of a little of both. Where do you fall in the line of like, don't overcommit and have to build it, just buy something out of the box and test it, versus looking at all products as something that you can buy, but it's the ability to build on it has to be paramount. Where are you in the mix of, because I mean, you look at like, you don't know what tomorrow brings, right? So I build this company and I end up getting bought, or I end up merging or partnering or integrating with somebody. If our product is not customizable, we could be in deep trouble. But at the same time, we make our own trouble because we're not in the business of building CRMs.
Right. Yeah. So I'll probably come at that a few different ways. So first, clearly I'm in the software business, so I'm a buy person all day long.
Yep.
I think especially with subscription models now, the barrier to entry and the switching costs have come down so much versus even what on-premise software was 10 years ago or 15 years ago to subscription models. It's just like, it went from it made sense to buy to now it's like it makes no sense to build.
Oracle still is a pain in the ass, though. Do we agree?
Yeah, exactly.
just want to get that out there.
Exactly. So I do think buy all day long. However, then I think you do have to figure out, well, look, I might buy now and I might do out of the box now, but if I'm going to get competitive differentiation from doing something unique versus my competitors, what's the opportunity to customize or to configure this thing to actually work for me over the medium to long term? Because that's where you're going to get most of the economies of scale and most of the return out of the investment that you make. And so I very much think a few things, right? Buy definitely over build. I would also say, there are some companies that like to go buy 35 different toys that you could actually get from 7 different vendors. I do think the going and finding a sweet vendor that does more than one thing. So I think Salesforce is a good example. Like, yes. I don't know that I'm going to go get, you know, I mean, some companies do this, but like, I'm going to get my Sales Cloud from them. It's actually important that my Service Cloud stuff talks to my Sales Cloud stuff, yeah, and that I have one customer record and so forth. And I might want to think about getting my Marketing Cloud stuff from them as well. Like where their core is, I think, you know, you, and so you have to find those different companies that have a core, and that core has good strength in two or three areas. There, I think you can find suite vendors, essentially. So buy for sure. To the extent you can find companies that have suites that do two things, three things, four things, is brilliant. I don't like the idea of buying and then piecing together everything as a best of breed strategy because you want to rip and replace everything. Like, who has time for that?
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to think in 3 to 5 year increments, not, you know, 3 to 5 quarter increments in terms of your technology reboots and rip and replaces, because you're, no one has the time, the money, or the discipline inside, especially these scale up companies, to have that much churn in their technology. Is just, you know, they want to spend their time doing something else, like, yeah, developing software, building a better pitch, finding more customers, not pouring all this time and effort into their tech stack.
Call it a strategic placement of a question,
yeah,
but I said it that way because I think show, like, just, it shows the, pun intended, the shows the ShowPad value, because I really look at it and go, you know, we work at tech and build technology for a bunch of companies. We are a managed offshore partnership with a bunch of very large companies here, and we are the person who kind of does what you're doing, but just on tech. We're making sure that you do make the right decision, that you don't overspend, or that you do spend where you really need to. And I don't see a lot of companies. And others, SMBs is different because they've been developed differently, but I don't see a lot of growth companies looking at this investment and partnering with people like ShowPad instead of just going to, like, we're going to buy this and then we're just going to hire a bunch of engineers and build it. It's like, why?
Right.
Why would you spend all of that money and human capital when you could just ask for help? Doesn't, yeah, make sense.
It doesn't. I think part of that is just maturity, lack of patience. Part of that is, you know, there are companies like ShowPad and like others that are out there, competitors of ours, also, you know, companies that are complementary to us. That's just, we're in the process of very much building awareness,
yeah,
right? And people, like, buyers don't have, like, ubiquitous understanding and knowledge of everything that's out there and available. And part of it is because it's super confusing. Like,
yeah,
there's so many tools. They all sort of do the same thing, but they don't really.
Just include. Onboarding Salesforce is a nightmare.
Right, right. And so how, like, as a buyer, like, it's very challenging. So I don't spend the beef I have with the buyers is not trying to solve the problem correctly, right? Like if they could get their head wrapped around that, that would be a step in the right direction. But I don't fault them for looking out over the technology landscape and being just, like, completely confused,
yeah,
at all of the different solutions that exist out there. And so I do think there's just Salesforce, that's good. Like, they have a big brand, and I know they solve a bunch of problems, but there's not that many other, especially in the world of sales tech,
yeah,
there are not that many other big rocks of companies with brands that people are like, no one got fired for buying XYZ,
yeah,
company.
Right? Well, that's a whole other component of this, right? is buying stuff that's sort of like, I don't want to say legacy, but it's your legacy. Like, that's, will people judge me and be like, what were you doing? You went rogue.
Right, right. And I think that's, you know, people do, they manage their own personal risk in some of these scenarios as well. So I do feel that there is a, I don't know where I can buy this, therefore I'll buy something that looks close and then I'll build it the rest of the way because I've got some people that may be available to go do that. And I don't think, maybe people wake up and choose to do that as a strategy. I'd like to believe that they actually just don't understand a better way because they don't have great knowledge of all the other solutions.
I think too many people do that for it to be an accident.
Yeah, maybe.
If you could give one line on the way out here for what people should be looking for, if I'm shopping for this tomorrow, what should I be looking for?
For ShowPad? For
sales, I mean, tech. Yeah, for sales tech, yeah.
Yeah, for sales tech, I think I would say you've probably solved the lead problem. And largely solve the lead problem. I would argue that most people have not solved the content and the sales experience and buyer experience problem. And I would take a hard look around your organization and say, what sort of experience does my buyer have right now? And is that an experience I'm proud of that feels like it has continuity and ultimately is succeeding? And I think most companies would struggle to answer that question feeling good about it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And where do people go to ShowPad?
www.showpad.com.
It's that easy. To invest in startups, download past episodes, or apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase, check out technori.com. Stay connected by following us on social @technori. You can follow me @Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.